Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to discuss this morning three verses from Canto 10, Chapter 26. 11, 12, and 13 are the verses. And while I remember, for those of you that are online, for the weekdays, Monday through Friday, class will be at 7 o'clock, not at 7:30 Central Time. So in this section that we're reading from, these the chapter is Wonderful Krishna, and the elders are reflecting back on Krishna's lifting in Govardhan Hill and wondering, wow, who is he? And so they're reviewing his killing of demons pastimes that preceded the lifting of Govardhan Hill, and wondering the astonishment, secondary rasa astonishment is predominating here, and they're remembering his pastimes, how wonderful, how powerful, how unlimitedly powerful is this little boy. Our affectionate regard for Krishna is now getting challenged by our wondering, who is he? So starting with text 11, there's no purport in the BBT Bhagavatam. There's some very short commentary by our acharyas. Text 11, translation. After arranging for the mighty Lord Balaram to kill the terrible demon Pralamba, Krishna saved the Vraja's cowherd boys and their animals from a forest fire. There were two forest fires, and this is one of two. This one comes after the killing of Pralamba. Deva Goswami's commentary says, through Balaram he had Pralamba killed. This shows Krishna's prominence. Why did he have Balaram and not others kill Pralamba? Balaram possessed great strength by Krishna's influence. In his presence, no one else was suitable to kill Pralamba. Sanatan Goswami writes, through Balaram he had Pralamba killed. Similar, this shows Krishna's prominence. And almost the same commentary. Text 12. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent, Kaliya. And after humbling him, he drove him forcibly from the lake of the Yamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free of the snake's powerful poison. Vishwanath writes, how could this little boy destroy the pride of the most poisonous king of snakes so that he left the lake? Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna subdued Kaliya while destroying his pride, the Madam. He sent him free of pride from the lake. And Vishwanath writes, here the cowherd men mean to say, quote, how could this little boy humble the most poisonous king of snakes so that he left the lake? And then text 13 does have a purport, BBT purport. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? Naturally, there's commentary on this one. Purport. The very word Krishna means the all-attractive one. The residents of Vrindavan could not give up their constant love, anuraga, for Lord Krishna. Their attitude toward him was not particularly theistic because they were unsure whether he was God or not, but he attracted all their love precisely, because as God, he is the all-attractive person, the supreme object of our love. The cowherd men also asked, quote, how is it that young Krishna feels such constant love for us? In fact, the Supreme Lord loves all living beings who are eternally his children. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna dramatically declares his affection for Arjuna and urges Arjuna to reciprocate that love by surrendering to him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his prayers to Lord Krishna, states, Eta darshi tava kripa bhagavan mama pi dirdaivam idrisha mahajani nanuraga. My Lord, you are so merciful toward me, but I am so unfortunate that love for you has not awakened within me. In this statement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also uses the word anuraga. Our misfortune is that we cannot reciprocate the anuraga, or loving affection, that the Lord feels for us. Although we are infinitesimal and insignificant, and the Lord is infinitely attractive, somehow we do not give him our love. We must accept responsibility for this foolish decision, since to surrender to God is not the essential. Surrender to God or not is the essential expression of our free will. Final paragraph of the purport. The Krishna consciousness movement provides an efficient, systematic program to help the conditioned souls revive their original blissful consciousness, which is love of God, Krishna consciousness. The intricacies of Krishna consciousness are so wonderful that even Krishna's eternal associates, the residents of Vrindavan, are astonished by them, as shown in these verses. Here's Vishwanath commentary. The wonderful activities of the child were shown as evidence that he is God. In this verse, they speak to show how they are all united in their devotional feelings towards Krishna. Quote, though he is your child, not ours, our attraction to him is very strong. Not only do we have parental affection for him, not only do the boys have friendly affection for him, not only do all the male and female animals and birds of the forest have affection for him, but that affection is increasing in newer ways at every moment. We cannot give up that affection because it is natural. And even though we now see that he has the qualities of God, we cannot give up that attraction. One has more affection for one's own body than wealth and children, and more affection for one's soul than one's body, and more affection for Paramatma than one's own soul. Thus, Krishna must be Paramatma. Such affection could not be possible if he were a mere human. But if you concede that he is Paramatma, then how is it possible for Paramatma to have such natural attraction for the inhabitants of Braja and the animals of the forest? For Paramatma is self-satisfied. Being self-satisfied, he should be indifferent to everything. He would not have such attraction to us who are absorbed in material life. Very clever. Jiva Goswami, we cannot give up your son even if we consider all the factors. There is natural attraction to him. This is true for all the people of Raja. The attraction that we have for Krishna, who attracts all hearts and is most beautiful, cannot be given up. The attraction of him for us is natural, starting from Krishna's birth. Though we are unqualified, we have attraction for him. This is praise, since he has wonderful, all wonderful qualities. Perhaps he is the Atma of all beings. He is the soul. And we are the body. Sanatan Goswami. They discuss among themselves. They address Nanda with great affection, explaining their great affection for Krishna. If he is the Lord, even then, by his show powers, our bhakti increases. Natural anurag arises with restriction of fear and respect. Though we directly witness his powers, we cannot give up affection for him because it is natural. This repeats because it's one of the words in the verse. Out-patika. Out-patika. Natural. Like heat arising from fire. Paragraph. Inferring he is the Lord by protecting us from danger, the affection should decrease. All of us, from infants to elders, experience this. We cannot give up attraction to he who attracts everyone's heart with his beautiful form, even though we are the most fallen and offensive. How is this? He is not Narayana, the source of avatars, and he is not some avatar. He is completely different by his special, remarkable form as a child with sweetness and power. He must be an ocean of inconceivable greatness, some great person. Paragraph. The truth is this. He is both avatari and avatar, endowed with unlimited powers while performing extraordinary childhood pastimes. He is most inconceivable, having contrary qualities. He is a special form of Bhagavan. Oh, Nanda, always full of joy, he is your son. You have great fortune. Your name is suitable since you are always blissful because of such a son. Now that little comment later in this chapter, there's commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Text 32 of this chapter, of chapter 14. Chapter 14. We're discussing chapter 14 in the evening. That's Brahma's prayers. So in one of Brahma's prayers, Brahma says, how greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the coward man, and all the other inhabitants of Rajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. So the it's the reverse. Brahma is speaking about the good fortune of the Brijbasis, and it's the Brijbasis here in this chapter speaking about their good fortune. Their spontaneous attraction for Krishna is their good fortune. And there's we'll go a little bit into nectar devotion topics. Advanced stages of bhakti come about when one's heart has become sufficiently cleansed. The cleansing of the heart, one way of understanding it is the coverings, anartas, the unwanted things in the heart become, by practice, they become diminished. And when they become diminished, then the heart becomes cleansed. And in that condition of cleansed heart, the regulative form of bhakti takes on a slightly different form. And that slightly different form is raganuga bhakti, sometimes called raganuga sadhana bhakti. But it's where one performs regulative activities externally, and the internal sadhana is an attraction for a particular associate of Krishna. Supposing, because that's the topic here, is parental affection or friendship, whatever. So parental affection. So supposing one becomes very attracted to that kind of affection, parental affection. So then the method, internal contemplation, cultivation method, is remember Mother Jasoda, for example. And how she speaks, how she dresses, her mannerisms, her feelings this time, feelings that time. An internal cultivation on remembrance of Mother Jasoda while doing your external activities. It's totally private and internal. And so those associates, whoever they may be, cowherd boys or gopis or whatever, friends of Krishna, they're the perfected souls. They're these ragatmikas. That's the language used in Nectar of Devotion. So it's right here in Vishwanath's commentary where he writes, so this is now going back to Brahma's Prayer, chapter 14. How fortunate the residents of Vrindavan are. Specifically, he's speaking about Nanda, the cowherd man, specifically those that have parental affection. And within that parental affection is also friendship. So, commentary. After praising the ragatmika, vatsalya prem, deep spontaneous parental affection of the Brijbasis, Brahma glorifies those with ragatmika, sakya prem, friendship. And all those relishing intimate relationships with the Lord. The word anandam indicates Brahman, as described in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. It's a little technical. The supreme reality is divine knowledge and bliss. The word parama used in this verse indicates that Krishna is the basis of Brahman. Technical. Krishna is the friend, not a temporary friend. Krishna is the eternal friend, Sanatana, of Sri Dham and others. From this eternal friendship, it is understood that Sri Dham and others are also eternal. It expresses the logic of that. In speaking of the eternality of Krishna's friendship, the friends are also understood to be eternal. This must be explained, since the word mitra connotes simply an ordinary friend. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan are ruled by Nanda Maharaj, down to the birds and beasts who were very fortunate. What to speak of Nanda himself and his cowherd men? Who can describe the fortune of those who became the friend of Paramanandam Brahma Sanatanam? It is indescribable. Then the reference to this verse, chapter 26. The gopas themselves say, "Oh, Nanda, everyone in Vraja has uncontrollable attraction to your son, and he has natural affection for us. What is the cause?" The cause is that Krishna is Purnam Brahma, the complete absolute truth. Therefore, the inhabitants of Vraja give the topmost bliss to Krishna and receive the topmost bliss in return. Witnessing this exchange of love, Lord Brahma repeats the phrase, "Aho, Bhagyam," twice, to indicate Krishna's, extreme bliss and astonishment. Now, there's some reference to this verse that we just discussed in chapter 46. It's a long, really long commentary. I'll read it. I don't know what it's in. See, maybe we'll understand as we read it. Chapter 46. You want to look it up? Chapter 46. It's text 36 from chapter 46, canto 10. Translation, O most fortunate ones, do not lament. You will see Krishna again very soon. He is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant in wood. Commentary, Nanda Maharaj said, Oh, how great is our misfortune that our son would never abandon us and always tells the truth, is delayed in returning to Braja. So that's it. Nanda's explaining Krishna's having gone to Mathura, having killed Kamsa, and he's going to come back soon. Don't worry. Uddhava speaks this verse to console Krishna's lamenting parents. Uddhava said, You should not lament. Very soon you'll be able to see Krishna. Nanda said, quote, You say we will see Krishna, but when will that be? Tomorrow? Or the next day? Or 10 days from now? With some consolation, we'll keep our life heirs from leaving our bodies till that day. But if Krishna is not coming, you should tell us truthfully. Let our life heirs leave us. For we cannot stand the pain of repressing them. Hearing Nanda speak like this, Uddhava considered, Alas, what advice can I give them? If they were suffering in separation from an ordinary mundane son, I could enlighten them by saying, Why are you immersed in the illusion of family attachment like this, family attachment to wife and sons is the cause of trouble. Give that up and attach yourself to the Lord. But how can I give this advice to Nanda, who is attached to Krishna as his son? It is not like Vasudev, on seeing the godly power of Krishna, weakened his attraction to Krishna as his son. Rather, by seeing Krishna's majestic powers, Nanda and Yashoda's attachment to their son becomes even stronger. And they think, alas, even the parents of an ordinary son die out of misery if they can no longer see him playing in their house. By our good fortune, the Lord himself played about in our house as our son. We lament bitterly if we cannot coddle Krishna for even a moment. How will we live without seeing that child in our home? We are most unfortunate having been separated from such a child. But on the other hand, still quoting, upon realizing the godly powers of Krishna, Vasudeva and Devaki think, Krishna is the worshipable Lord, he is not our son. Thus, they refrain from embracing and fondling him. Not only is the knot of possessiveness tied tightly for Nanda and Yashoda, but Krishna has stronger possessiveness of them as well, even though he is the Supreme Lord. Unquote. I have seen Krishna's concern for their sake when he said, quote, go to Braja and make my father and mother happy and remove the pain of separation from the Braja gopis to give them news about me. So this is, this chapter 46 is Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan. And at the beginning of the chapter, Krishna is instructing him, as we just heard. And then he's now consoling Nanda. And then there's reference to this verse from Canto 10, chapter 26, text 13. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? So Krishna goes on. No. I don't know who's speaking. Uddhava. If I go to Mathura and bring Krishna here tomorrow, Jarasandha, angered over Kamsa's wives becoming widows, will come and destroy Mathura, who then will protect Vasudeva and the other Yadavas. If Krishna leaves Braja again and goes to Mathura to protect them, however, then the Vrijvasis will certainly die. If I tell the Vrijvasis that Krishna will come in 4 or 5 years, it'll be very hard for them to hold on for that long. If I lie, telling them Krishna will come after 4 or 5 days, when the time expires and they discover I lied, they will also die. Alas, as there is no other means, I will now weaken their prema by discoursing on spiritual knowledge. I will tell them that as the Super Soul, Krishna is indifferent to everything. And as the formless, impersonal Brahman, Krishna has no relationships with birth, father, mother, material activities, or the material body. To realize all this, I will teach them how to meditate on the soul. However, if Nanda and Yashoda's unlimited and unfathomable pure love for Krishna not only remains unchecked, but rather increases after hearing my discourse, then I'll return to Mathura and simply glorify their incomparable prema again and again, and the grand assembly of Krishna, Vasudev, Ugrasena, and the others. Hearing this, Uddhava meditated on Krishna and spoke about Krishna as the super soul. This is all purport or commentary. Uddhava said, as fire lies dormant within wood, Krishna is present within the hearts of all living beings. Just as the fire within wood is not visible without friction, similarly, Krishna is not visible without devotion. Hearing this, Nanda and Yashoda thought, Uddhava is telling us that if we do not perform devotional service, as the Vaishnavas do for Krishna, our son, why should he appear in our house? If that is the case, we must perform devotional service for our son, so that somehow or other he will appear in our house. After Uddhava returned to Mathura, Nanda and the cowherd man, their eyes brimming with tears, said, it's in chapter 46 after this chapter, oh, fortunate one, may our minds rest on Krishna's lotus feet. May our voices always sing his names. And may our bodies offer him respects. Here's another reference. This is Jiva Goswami speaking on verse 32 of chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers. So we'll get to this after some days, but here it is this morning. Jiva Goswami, Brahma's Prayers. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There's no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. The similar verse being referred to by Vishwanath. Paragraph. The description of your glories in the spiritual parts of the Vedas is not actually suitable. Understanding that his glories are completely different, Brahma speaks in astonishment. Oh! He is astonished. Then their good fortune is inconceivable. He repeats the phrase with boldness to show their extreme good fortune and indicates his still greater astonishment. Why, quote, why do you only show astonishment at the beginning? You should say what is astonishing about them. What is astonishing about them? Or what is the good fortune of Nanda and the other inhabitants of Braja, including the animals and birds? Krishna, who is the greatest bliss, gave them prema, which is deserved by natural friends. They were the objects of his prema. Now quoting this morning's verse, text 13. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? So then there's a lot of philosophy from the Upanishads. There is a little bliss, and there are many givers of prema in other forms of the Lord, but bliss itself is not the doer. In those cases, by bliss itself, namely Krishna, bliss itself is the giver of prema to the people of Braja. This is to be known from the Shruti alone. Parama, combined with Ananda, so Paramananda, means extraordinary sweetness by nature, like the highest sweetness and various degrees of sweetness in sugar candy. This is good fortune and astonishing. There's something else which is astonishing. What's that? The bliss. This bliss is eternal. Someone may have a little amount of bliss, but that is not eternal. These cowherd boys had eternal bliss. Why is that? It is because he, Krishna, is the greatest. Quotes some Sanskrit verse. Brahman is great and gives greatness to others. Scriptural reference. I'm going to stop there. Long commentary. But so this section, I mean, this particular verse, is important verse. It's pointing to, the unique position of Braja Prem. The position of Krishna's regard for the Brijvasis. I mean, there are other places where this is described, but you can see from the commentaries our acharyas really like the topic. They like churning the topic of the special feature of the Brijvasis. And by hearing the special feature of the Brijvasis described by them, it's very inspiring to appreciate these Ragatmika Bhaktas, perfected devotees. It promotes furthering along the path of sadhana bhakti to raghunuka bhakti, having some idea of, and then wanting to reach that position of the love of those residents. We'll step back and say, as we heard in the BBT purport, Krishna consciousness is love of God. So that's not a new idea. Love of God. Love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. That's the core teaching. That's the Krishna conscious core teaching that Christ gave. And Prabhupada often spoke about the kindness that Christ was offering by teaching that teaching, love of God. That's not a different teaching. It's not to say persons who follow that teaching don't become pure lovers of God. But this Srimad Bhagavatam description is very profound. What does God, love of God look like in the kingdom of God? And then there's varieties and degrees of intensity of that love of God. And so this superlative position. What to speak of when we're done with this Brahma's prayers section in the evening? I plan to speak about what the Bhagavatam and Brihat Bhagavatamrita teach us about the kingdom of God, because love of God is, what do? Well, you love God. And so in this world, you love God. And then when you go to the kingdom of God, what's there? Or what do? What's it like? No explanation that I'm aware of in any scripture of the world other than the Bhagavatam. So, it's kind of like, you know, a travel advertisement to go there. And then when there, so even here we are in, you know, coronavirus lockdown, speaking about, hearing about, remembering by that sound vibration, awakening some attraction for these most elevated Vrindavasis in different places it's spoken of, the unique position of the Vrindavasis and Krishna's regard for the, so he's equal, but he's partial at the same time he's equal. He reciprocates with the love. He reciprocates with the regard that a living entity has for him. And when that regard is, he is my only shelter, that's love of God, then he reciprocates. And then there's the science of rasa. And then there's amongst rasa, there's this unique position of the residents of Vrindavan. And we're in this section, we're getting what they think about the love that they have for him. So it's an attraction, in short. It's an attraction that goes beyond his divinity. Because his divinity may, eclipse or minimize or restrict, cover the spontaneous affinity or transcendental attachment that doesn't change with circumstance. Good circumstance, bad circumstance, appreciating his divinity, not appreciating. The attraction doesn't change. That's Stayi Bhava. This is a great science. It's a science of emotion in relation to God, and that emotion is eternal. The persons are eternal that have that emotion. The emotion is eternal. There's variety within that which is eternal, but it's the constant, even with the variety, is attraction. When gets to that stage, rati and asakti and bhava and prema, attraction grows and grows and just it becomes overwhelming. So these, we're hearing from these commentaries, Krishna has given prema. Now they're eternal associates, most of them. So in one sense, he doesn't give them, they have it. But he is the source of everything, so he gives it because he's the source. And then there's this relationship of prema between the two. They're the object of his attraction. He's the object of their attraction and affection and feelings. And wherever he goes, when he goes to Mathura, when he goes to Dwarka, his feelings don't stop. And their feelings towards him don't stop because of circumstance. It doesn't fade. Everything material comes and goes. It comes and it goes. Having that attraction awakened by hearing from those that have that attraction, our great acharyas and Shukadeva Goswami and so forth, by hearing from those that have that attraction, our natural attraction becomes awakened. Supposing one doesn't hear from one who has such attraction, and one just hears the message of love of God, that's fine. Then experiencing the love of the residents of Vrindavan isn't going to take place. Another kind of love of God will take place. So how fortunate are the residents of this verse, that the elders of Vrindavan are appreciating how fortunate we are. And that our attraction for Krishna doesn't waver and his attraction for us doesn't waver. Nanda, please explain. We're bewildered by this. And as we heard, our attraction for Krishna is greater than our attraction for our own family and our own children. That's not normal. You may have appreciation for others' children, but not more than your own children. But we have that, and not only we have it, everyone has, not just the human species, all living entities have it. So what is this? Nanda, you're very wise, please explain. By so they're spontaneous, the curtain has parted, and they're seeing divinity. But they're also appreciating, while seeing the divinity, that spontaneous attraction is there. Us towards Krishna, everyone towards Krishna, and Krishna towards everyone. And what's this all about? Why is it? Who is he, and why is this spontaneous attraction so indomitable? By their asking the question, and it gives the commentators' opportunity, the door is open for them to explain it in the way that they like to explain things. So we're getting, by their mercy, we're getting a picture of Braja Prem. And how attractive is it? Our hearts don't experience it primarily because of ignorance or attachment to the temporary. And we have to deal with the temporary. We have to be responsible in our life and our duties of life. But be responsible while simultaneously the attraction for the eternal relationship with Krishna becomes awakened. That's our task or our opportunity. And this message of Srimad Bhagavatam is a direct passage into that awakening of attraction for transcendence and attraction for the all-attractive, and attraction for the love of the resident of Vrindavan for the all-attractive, and how he reciprocates and he feels that love and feels attached to them. It's a mystery being revealed. And it still remains a mystery because we're covered. But we're getting a glimpse at least. And the churning, as spoken before, churning of attraction and purification of attachment to the temporary. Doesn't mean trash the temporary, just means the attachment to the temporary can subside. And that's part of an offering of our service to Krishna according to our psychophysical nature, while simultaneously becoming further and further attracted to and attached to and absorbed in eternal feelings of love for Krishna. It's so nice. The process is so nice. Very gentle. I mean, there are things in the worldly experience that's not so gentle. But the loving attraction is very gentle. Very, very attractive. And it's 8:30. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Krishna. Guru Maharaj, as you were sharing, hearing these pastimes can invoke that kind of attraction in our hearts. When I'm not mature enough in that ruchi or asati stage, is it okay to have that kind of internal cultivation you were mentioning?
Okay to have what?
The internal cultivation. You mentioned about the raga, nuga, and raga.
Well, it evolves naturally. It's not something like, you know, the clothes you put on in the morning. And then you take, you know, it's something that grows, it's internal, it grows. It's not, so. The followers of Lord Chaitanya should know we're followers of Lord Chaitanya. This is where following Lord Chaitanya leads us. And so, when there's some understanding of this, that's where the train is going. We're at different stages and passing through different stations, etc., looking out the window on the train. We're not there yet, but we know where the train is going. And we can anticipate getting to that destination. That's nice. But then, you know, and that may give impetus to carry ourselves properly as we're moving towards the destination, that is, our duties and our mannerisms and the quality of our communication, the thoughtfulness, the mindfulness behind what we're doing, that it should be pleasing to Krishna and not otherwise and so forth. It'll strengthen. But, our present situation, it can. But the reality comes in and we're not very advanced. Which is the theme of your questions when you ask. You know, I get distracted or I get angry or I get something. And then they get lost in that temporary. Good idea to have an idea where the train is going. It's also a good idea to stay, as they say these days, in the moment. Recognizing this is where I am. And this is what I need to be attentive to at the moment. And I need to dedicate that which I'm being attentive to in the moment to the pleasure of Krishna. So it spiritualizes my present moments of life. And I know where the train is going. Okay.
Kalpataru Mataji, similar question, Guru Maharaj. How does one select Krishna's associate that will best help one in their spiritual practice?
When you're more advanced, you won't have a problem. That is, you don't select. Rather, there is a natural attraction for. It's not a material thing, it's a spiritual thing. It grows. It's like, you know, I have in a bag, I have a bunch of seeds. And now, I plant the seeds and I find out what's the color of the flower. It's already in the seed. It's a blue one. It's a red one. It's a yellow one. It's a pink one. It's already within the seed. So just plant the seed and fructify the seed and nurture the seed nicely and there's no selecting.
Pritesh Prabhu is asking, why is it that without Lord Chaitanya's revealing the mood of residents of Vrindavan, no one earlier could appreciate Vrajavasi's mood as the highest form of devotion?
Well, it's a gift. It's not, it doesn't come otherwise. Lord Chaitanya gave the gift. And it wasn't done otherwise. That's why. If it was given prior, then it would be. And like Christ said, Prabhupada was speaking, there's so many things I have to tell, but you cannot bear to hear. He was speaking to an audience that wasn't, you know, pretty rough audience. And what did they do when he told what he told? They crucified him. Or Socrates. Just he was teaching about the soul. They said, okay, if you believe so strongly in the soul, then drink this poison. And he drank the poison. So what to speak of these other things? Because people aren't ready to hear. When Madhavendra Puri was experiencing love in the mood of the gopis, his followers couldn't understand him. So, you know, that's devotees, what to speak of worldly people. It's the phone? Is the phone causing that? You don't know. Okay, carry on.
Girish Prabhu, kindly explain the difference between Raganika Bhakti and Ragatmika Bhakti.
This Ragatmika is the perfected souls, and Raganuga is those who are striving for that perfection.
And Sthiramata asks, different acharyas explain different things in different ways.
Yes.
It is their realization from Krishna that they are sharing this different from mundane scholars.
Yes.
Interpreting things from
mind. Yes. Okay. Krishna is reciprocating with different acharyas in different ways. And they're expressing directly that which Krishna has inspired.
And it's from the public, Nidhi Yadav. What's the best kind of service for the Lord?
What's the best kind of service for the Lord? That's a broad question. I think I would need some clarification on what's the intent behind the question. Huh? Oh, the best service to the Lord. Well, whatever it is, here's a short answer. Whatever it is that helps one awaken love for the Lord, that's the best service. Say it again. You judge a thing by its result. Palena parachiyate. That which awakens love for God, that's the best service to God. That's the result. You judge a thing by its result. That which awakens love for God, that's the best service to God. According to our Vedic scripture, that which is most effective to awaken love of God is the calling of God's name. It's not only in our Vedic scriptures, it's in scriptures of the world. Singing, praising, hallowing, vibrating, calling the name of God with a mood of veneration and reverence. That's a best service because it awakens love of God. And then the activities of one's life take that power of love of God. So then one lives a life of love of God, but it starts with awakening that love of God. That's the best service. That which awakens love of God as the fruit.
And Swetha Jagannath asks, how do we cultivate the nature of astonishment and wonder in our lives, like the Vrajavasis?
Well, the way you cultivate it is you develop your love of God. That is to say, the primary rasa comes first before the secondary rasas. The primary rasa is a mood of service in different moods of loving relation with the Lord, with the Supreme. So the first, the cultivation of the secondary is to cultivate the primary. And you cultivate the primary by these most effective means that awaken love of God.
And Radhavala Prabhu asks, attraction is a gradual process, hence self-acceptance is key throughout journey.
Say, read it again. Self-acceptance?
Self-acceptance is key through our journey rather than constantly seeking external approvals and validation. So, attraction is a gradual process. Hence, self-acceptance is a key through our journey rather than constantly seeking external approval or validations.
That's a statement. He's seeking, is that a correct, is that what he's looking for? Seems like. So read the first part again.
Attraction.
Attraction.
Is a gradual process.
Yes.
So it looks like.
So I'm not sure how he's connecting the attraction and the self-acceptance part. Self-acceptance, let's just say commonly that would mean, self-acceptance means I'm not yet attracted. That's what we just heard in one of the commentaries, Shikshastika 2. I know that Krishna is all attracted, but I'm not attracted. I'm distracted. Nanuraga. This anuraga is missing. So my attraction is missing. And there's self-acceptance that says that's what my present position is. I'm not sure exactly what he's seeking, and he's not here to explain it, so maybe you could send a little text to explain what it is that it is that you want to hear, because I'm not clear what you want to hear. Yes, attraction is a gradual, and self-acceptance is I'm not there yet, but I want to be there. And you put those two together with striving by right means to reach that attraction stage, then fine. If that satisfies, no need to send some additional message.
Next is Girish Pingle Prabhu. For one who has attained spontaneous attraction, like Vrajavasis, does Paramatma in their heart gets replaced by Shyamasundara Krishna?
Well, it depends on their mood. One of the teachings of our scripture, just reading this yesterday, the Lord is so kind that he accepts or he manifests a form exactly according to the mood of the person who is attracted to him. He manifests a form corresponding to the one who's attracted to him. So the answer to his question is depends on what their attraction is. That's what form is going to be manifest.
This is Prashant Pandey Prabhu. Is Krishna Prema in the mood of Rajavasis not found in any other Vaishnava Sampradaya? Please elaborate on this.
Please elaborate. Well, I'm not so conversant in the teachings of other sampradayas, so I can't answer in kind of a comprehensive, authoritative way. I do know that some of the other sampradayas, two of them in particular, have a strong emphasis on the unique position of Radha in her relationship with Krishna. That is, they have a clear understanding of Madhurya Rasa. And so it seems, because I'm not a scholar or learned in what other sampradayas say, it seems that some also have a sense of the uniqueness of Raja Prem. But I can't speak too much about that because I don't know so much.
This is from Michael DeLeo.
Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. For me, Harinam is the best service that awakens love of God.
Next.
Neeraj Bhatnagar, some people do not believe in the existence of God. What's the best way to help them?
Best way to help atheists. Prasadam, probably. And just having them here chanting, whether they're atheists or not atheists, or theists, chanting of the holy name.
Sri Radhika Mataji's question. The last point you mentioned in class was that the process is very gentle. It is easy for ruffians like myself to miss something so gentle, so subtle and so refined. I'm linking this to an image you often share of an iceberg. The misvalues, so to speak, sit so deep under the surface. At my current stage, lacking in gentility, it's unnatural to assume the external behavior that will always align with deeply held values. So how do I refine my ability to allow Krishna consciousness to seep through in spite of such rough filters?
Well, welcome to the club. There are lots of persons in the same position. And a message of Bhakti Siddhanta that I've been meditating on of late, I shared the other day, and that is offenseless chanting has an effect of effacing. We discussed this. Well, the word effacing is a different word than we usually use in our common language. Offenseless chanting has the effect of effacing both the gross and subtle body. A nice word. Dictionary definition, because I had to look it up. Effacing means wearing away to the point of extinction, like a common use of the word effacing is effacing the dates on a coin. As coins rub and rub and rub and rub and rub against other coins, then what the date on the coin may become effaced. It's still there, but it's hard to discern it. And eventually, gone. So, the answer to her question is by offenseless chanting. So we strive for offenseless chanting. That's the primary means to get to the stage where what she's wishing for, which is good to wish for, the aspiration, the hankering, the yearning for coming to that stage is a very important part of coming to offenseless chanting. And you continue with enthusiasm. And then it becomes your experience instead of the present experience. That to do all that requires faith and requires good association, requires determination, requires some number of things, but and continuing to make proper choices as we move down the passage of time and life. Continue to make choices that are directed towards that pure chanting and living, we can say, living from the heart or living from that deeply held convictions place. And there isn't a substitute. Okay. We're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.